Hi friends, I'm Emily Thomas and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, where I chat with friends each week about how they've moved from just plain old struggling to struggling well. The show is not only about motherhood and kids though. The fact of the matter is, we all have struggles. So think of it more as a conversation regarding how to be less bad at our jobs. I don't know about you, but I can use all the help I can get. So let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone. If you are new here, I'm so glad you found the show. You're tuning in to episode 52. There are 52 weeks in a year. Yes, I've been doing this for a year. You've tuned in on a great week. I'm talking to my friend Grace Cho. In this conversation, we cover so many topics. I had a real difficult time giving the episode a title. We talk some about feeling unwelcome and uninvited because you just don't fit in. Grace will talk about how this has been true for her in several different ways. Additionally, we cover the anger that we often experience as parents. Don't be a liar. You know you are angry sometimes. And how Grace is making progress towards being less angry. She talks about the way she's pursuing soul rest in preparation for an upcoming season that she knows is going to be kind of challenging. There's so many good things in this episode, but before we get started, I wanted to have a quick marketing meeting with you guys. As you know, you are the marketing department. You're the ones getting the word out about the show. It can be difficult to continue to come up with inventive, new, fresh ideas. I get it, so I wanna help. This idea is really good because it doesn't cost any money and it is not illegal. It only requires that you pretend that you didn't hear someone correctly. This is something we all know how to do. I know I do it every time. My kids ask if they can have a couple more minutes before bedtime. I'm sorry, what? I didn't hear you. What? Time for bed, let's go. Okay, so this is how it goes. When you meet a new person, hopefully a woman, because that's kind of the target demographic. When you meet them and they say, "What's your name?" All you have to do is respond, "Mom, struggling well." They will say, "What?" And this is when you say, "You just said, what's my favorite podcast, right? Isn't that what you asked?" Then they go, "Oh my gosh, no, I asked your name, but tell me more about the show." It's that easy, you guys. This is where your relationship to that person benefits. They will consider you an expert now on all the things. They will come to you when they don't know what car insurance to buy. Should I buy this shirt? I don't know. Does it look good on me? They're going to think that you know everything because you introduce them to the best podcast they have ever heard in their life. Okay? So get to work. Tell me how that goes. I look forward to hearing about it. All right, let's get started with my talk with Grace. Hey, Grace, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show. How are you?
You're welcome. And I'm good. So many questions. I didn't know which one to answer first. So I met you a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It was nice. It was too short.
I know it was. I think we were just sitting at the same table at Influence Conference, right?
Yeah, just for one meal or whatever.
And I thought, she's funny. I'm going to follow her.
I know. I've been very glad to follow you as well on the Instagram.
Yes.
So tell everybody a little bit about who you are.
Okay. I'm a writer. Okay. I was a pastor for the past 6.5 years here in Vegas. I just stepped down this past Sunday from that position, and we're about to transition into a new season of life. I am a wife to a cook and mom to 2 little ones, and that's pretty much my life.
Okay, so I have lots of questions based on even just those couple of sentences. So what was it like to leave on Sunday?
Okay, to be honest, I think I was ready.
Okay.
To step down from the responsibilities. So that part was exciting. Like, yay, I'm done. I don't have to do anything anymore. But I did cry myself to sleep the night before. Mm. Just because it's another marker that we really are leaving this place.
Yeah.
We moved to Vegas right after we got married.
Okay.
So our entire marriage, my journey in motherhood has all been here. And so that part is sad, knowing that, yeah, and just 6 weeks or 2 months or so, we're going to be leaving our place forever and our community forever. Well, forever sounds so extreme, but that part is sad. But the actual responsibilities and job, I'm glad to leave.
So you're moving back to Southern California,
mm-hmm.
and that's where you spent some time before.
Yes, I was born in LA. When I was 9 is when we moved to Kazakhstan as missionaries. And then I came back to Orange County my junior year in high school. Finished up high school in Irvine, went to college at UC Irvine.
Okay.
And got my credential in California. And after I got that, I realized that's not what I wanted to do. So I went to seminary in Boston.
Okay, so whole teaching credential in California?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I moved to Boston for seminary and then got married in California and came to Vegas after that.
Okay, so you've been some places.
Yeah.
Just a couple places. I went to school actually in Fullerton.
Oh, did you?
Yes,
wait.
I'm familiar.
Are you from California?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. College.
Okay.
Yeah, college. I'm from Arizona. Okay, so Kazakhstan. Tell me, how long were you there and what was it like?
I lived there from 9 to 16 and... Honestly, when we moved there, I was just a kid. And so to me, it was regular life. And that we moved in 91, which is right when the USSR fell down.
Okay.
So everything was new in the sense that I think the country itself was rebuilding. And I don't know, it was just regular life. I mean, it was harder for my older sister because she was in seventh grade when we moved.
And everything's hard in seventh grade.
Yeah, everything is already hard. And she had to leave her friends. And she was with us the least amount of time before she moved back. And so we each had a different experience. There are four of us. So
overall, it was kind of a good experience for you, or at least seeming pretty regular.
Yeah. Well, it just felt like regular life. I mean, just being a missionary's kid, I think, impacted the way I look at the world, the way I feel being back in the States and living here pretty permanently.
So what changed? What did it change about how you think?
Most MKs, I think, or any TCK, third culture kid, would agree that we always feel restless and that there's no sense of home wherever we are.
Okay.
And that our identity is, it's muddled because we don't feel like we belong fully anywhere, but we also feel, we do feel at home in all these places, but not fully at home, if that makes sense.
Mm. Okay. So you were there for 7 years and you feel like that changed kind of how you think even as a adult.
Yeah. After coming back and just thinking of God, what do you want to do with my life? I thought, obviously a missionary. That just makes sense because I grew up there. I've always wanted to be overseas. I love cultures. I am good with languages. And so naturally, I just thought he wants me overseas. And so that shaped the way I planned my life and how I dreamed for my life. So it was a rude awakening when God closed the doors to that and said for me to stay in the States.
Hmm.
And so, and I think even now, I still feel restless at times. And now it's changed. I'm not looking for like a country or a city or any place to call home necessarily.
Okay.
But that I feel like this longing I have is a longing for heaven, really. And so that part I'm really grateful for because I always feel that kind of homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
And only now am I really realizing that, yes, I could totally have my community here or my church or whatever, my comfort zones. But really what I long for is a place to just like sigh, relax, and be at home. And I really think now my gaze is heavenward.
I bet that seems kind of sad that you don't have that. And I think that it is in for reals.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me... I'm just trying not to invalidate that by saying I feel the opposite in some ways. Like, I like where I live now. Uh-huh. I like the community I have now. And so I find that, because every once in a while, my husband's like, well, we may have to move. My job may this and that. Like, he's got the most ridiculous career for someone like me who just wants to never leave.
I see. Are you a homebody?
I'm a homebody, and I like my house. I like my friends. I like my church. And so I find that, like, I have to keep prying my... fingernails out of like this place, which is equally hard and bad because at any point I might have to leave. And so I kind of live in the constant, it's getting better, but I can live in the constant terror of
I get it. Yeah, I get it. And I think I feel that about Vegas, that we really started our lives here. And so to leave this place where people know us as a family unit, I feel that kind of grief and loss really.
Yeah. I always want a tattoo. Every couple minutes, I want a new tattoo. Right. And I've had two that were very bad choices, like super bad. So for some reason, my husband thinks that if I get a third one, it will also be bad. But I don't know where he gets that.
Do you only have two?
I only have two, but they're gone now. Like they were bad enough to be removed. Yes. But I wanted to get a tent. But the idea of this is not our home. We are traveling through here.
Okay.
Because I'm so like, I have death grip on this place that I am, that I'm like, just calm it on down. and tattoo. And my husband's like, just draw one on yourself with a Sharpie. Let's not make that permanent.
That's where temporary tattoos come in.
I know. I totally need anybody who wants to draw me a tent tattoo. There aren't a lot of them, if you can imagine. It's not something people want.
I mean, do you envision a camping tent?
Yeah, like a camping tent. I will not be getting it, but I still want it. Okay, so you have been writing lately about being an Asian American and what is that like and the struggle of it. And it kind of sounds like the third culture kid and the missionary kid. It all kind of swirls around to be like this thing that you can speak intelligently about. So obviously I'm not an Asian American. I did, however, live in China for 3 years. So I kind of
opposite
can see, like, for me. And I'm going to ask you about your experience, but my, mm-hmm. I was met with either like amazement and mm-hmm. can I take a picture with you because I think you're famous in America, or you are rich and you can pay 10 times the regular amount. Which they had no idea. I mean, we made less than like taxi drivers, because there you ask, how much do you make? And we'd be like, this amount, it's basically nothing. And the taxi driver would be like, oh, I make more than you. And then if you factor in the fact that we paid 10 times as much for carrots as you do, then like we super have less money, but nobody knows what's real about us. They just know what they think is real about us. So I have just a very small taste of it, but tell me what that's like and what are the struggles.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because when I had posted, I started writing for Mudroom this past March, and
tell us about that blog.
Okay. Mudroom is an amazing community of women who write about hard things in life. And I think one of the unique things about Mudroom is that there are people from different backgrounds and different faiths different perspectives of the Christian faith, I should say.
Okay.
And we all get to write on these topics that are heavy or even light. I don't know. It's just a good place to find community and to have the comfort and freedom to write honestly.
Okay.
I felt really lucky that Tammy had asked that I intern for them in March. And then eventually she asked me to become a monthly contributor and editor. And so this past month, in the month of June, we talked about race, culture, and identity. And I got to write my story for that. Anyways, to go back to your story, one of the commenters on that post, she wrote about how she lives in Japan as a white woman. And she has a family. She's married. And how she feels the same things or similar things to the things I had written in my post. And I think as a minority in any kind of context, you will feel these things. Mm-hmm. People see you a certain way, and that's the only thing you could be. Another thing is that people just assume things about you that mm-hmm. may or may not be true, and that people will treat you differently by the way that you look or the way that you dress. And so I feel like that is a very common story amongst minorities. And for my story, I think my story is a bit different because I also grew up overseas. So I didn't really feel the pressures, or I don't even think I really felt the racism until I moved back to the States.
Okay.
And I was more like you, what you were describing when you were in China, that because they saw me as a Westerner, even though there are Korean people there, they saw me as a Westerner, and I prided myself on being American. So I was seen kind of with more value, I think, than the local people. And so that was different, I think, when you're seen with those kinds of eyes. And I'm the pastor's daughter. I was, you know, in charge of a lot of things at church. And so naturally, I was a leader.
Yeah.
And people looked to me like that. So
it was
coming
favorable.
Back to this, favorable. Yeah, that's a good word. But coming back to the States, I think that was the first time that I felt like I'm a nobody. And
because of being Asian?
Because of being Asian. And I think because the majority is white.
Okay.
A white community. And so even in Irvine, which anyone who knows Irvine, it's heavily Asian, populated by Asians. And so even amongst other Asians, I think I felt like a nobody, or I felt not welcome or not invited. Or
why?
I think because I'm still different. I'm not fully Asian American. I'm not fully Asian or Korean. And there were these subcategories even amongst Asians, because there were so many of them at our high school.
Okay.
There were like the FOBS. FOBS stands for Fresh Off the Boat, which now that makes sense, that show. I don't know if anyone knew why that show was called Fresh Off the Boat. But,
okay, yeah.
But that's what we would call people who had just immigrated.
Is that derogatory? It sounds like it.
You know, I didn't think so, because that's just what we referred to them as.
Okay.
And I think it depends. Obviously, we just use that term so loosely amongst Asians.
Yeah, because I never heard it before.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, even Tammy was like, define fob. What is that? Aside from a key fob.
Yeah, I was like, you put your keys on it?
So there was that group of newly immigrated Asians, and then there were whitewashed Asians, which I didn't, I don't think that's a, you know, I don't know. Some people are offended by these terms, and I don't know, we use them so frequently that it didn't seem like anything at the time. I don't know now. Okay. And so those kids were the kids who somehow got into the majority culture, and all their friends are predominantly white. They're always part of the popular kids. And so there was that group. And then just your regular old Asian Americans who were born here and grew up with both cultures. Okay. And so we're called second gen. Our parents are the first gen who immigrated here. And then we're the second gen to be born and to live here. So, and I was part of that group, just regular Asian Americans. Okay. But even then, I didn't feel like I fully belonged, just because I also had just come back from living overseas. And so that always added a strange component of my identity.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me, when I lived in China, they would always, you know, they called me old outsider, literally was what that, you know, and so you heard it, Lao Wai, all the time. And so I finally got a shirt that said Lao Wai, Lila, meaning foreigner coming. And then on the back, it said foreigner going. So I was just like, let's just call it what it is. But I knew I could live with that because I went home every summer and I was there for 3 years. Do you know what I'm saying?
I see.
So I what see. Do you, for me, I feel like it would make me eventually pretty bitter if I knew like this is my new normal. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that? Or is that not kind of how you feel?
I think I just took it as is. Like, this is life, and that's the way it is. And Aaliyah Joy had written a post for Mudroom, and she called it internalized racism.
Okay.
And this idea of we just accepted the fact that we are not part of the majority culture and that this is our lot in life. And so we just accept it, suck it up, and live life as a second lesser citizen in this
community. Like second class? Is that
second class, yes. Second class citizen. And so that's what I thought until recently.
Okay.
I just thought, you know what? This is my life. And I need to, sometimes I can be fully who I am. And sometimes I need to cover up some of who I am so that I can adjust and accommodate the majority culture. And even my own culture, I think I've just taught myself to adjust wherever I am. And so it wasn't until maybe this past year that I really started to wrestle with my cultural identity and even as an Asian American, but also as an Asian American woman, and what that looks like in the church, in our community, in the bigger picture of the States. Yeah.
Okay. So what does that look like too? Because I don't like you having to adjust all the time. That makes me really uncomfortable. I don't even know what to say about it, but I don't like it. So what's happened this past year? What are you doing differently? What's it look like?
What does it look like? You know, for the first time, I am accepting my Korean heritage. Okay. And the fact that my Korean Americanness is okay. Hmm. And that it's needed and valued. And that was a turning point for me, because it felt like an impediment to have, like, to not be white felt like an impediment, that I couldn't do everything I wanted to do because I'm not white. And I noticed that whenever I go to conferences, I'm one of the token Asians at the conference.
Okay.
And that wasn't anything to me. It didn't feel uncomfortable. It didn't feel weird. I don't feel weird or uncomfortable when I'm the minority. But I realized that I rarely ever get to see Asian Americans on the stage or in leadership at conferences. And so realizing, oh, wait, my words make a difference. And this all came with writing. This all like came with what God is calling me to do, or the way that he was leading my life. And all those things came together, that I have a voice, that I should use my voice, and that I have a unique angle to this life and to our faith. And
absolutely. Yes.
And that I should share it. That's what he's been telling me as he's called me out of church ministry, that he wants to use my writing. And that took a long time to finally accept. But accepting that, and accepting that I'm a bridge builder, because I'm both and in terms of culture, and also neither nor. I don't fit completely anywhere, but that is a benefit instead of a handicap.
Focusing on what you're not is silencing and debilitating, where God has provided you with so much and so many unique experiences that people need to hear, but you need to first find it valuable enough to say it. And
right.
I think you are, and I think that's fantastic. I love
it. Yeah, I feel like a different person, and especially in my writing, I think I felt really hesitant to even accept that I have value in my words. Mm-hmm. Realizing this about myself and knowing who I really am in Christ and finding freedom in that and finding confidence in that, that has been huge for me. And I think people can see that or hear that in my writing. And friends and readers have told me that they could hear it in my voice that I've changed. And so I'm grateful.
That's great. I think I can't wait to see where it takes you.
Yay.
So, okay, you told me that there is a struggle that you have in motherhood, and it's kind of anger and staying present. Mm-hmm. And that something you've been working on is finding better rhythms mm-hmm. for your life and your soul. Mm-hmm. Kind of unpack that for me. What does that look like?
Okay. Anger is, I think it's a generational sin in our family.
Okay.
Most people who become mothers or parents find that their children bring out the worst in them.
For sure. Yes.
And so I thought I would be a fabulous mother, and I loved kids. I loved playing with them. I always thought I loved children's ministry. Now I realize I'm not gifted in that area after doing it for 3 years.
Oh, man.
So anyways, anger has been a struggle for me to manage. And I think just knowing how to have a different response to my kids when they annoy me or when they frustrate me or when they don't listen, it's been really hard. Also, we didn't think we could have biological kids. And so when we did get pregnant, I think it was just a shock. We thought God wanted us to adopt at that point. And I think he did give me a heart for adoption. It just hasn't come to fruition at this point.
Okay.
And so all of that combined, when I actually became a mom, I didn't know how to deal with it. And I didn't know where my identity was. And that all led to frustration and raising toddlers. My kids are 15 months apart. And so raising two toddlers has been challenging, to say the least.
Yes. And, severe understatement.
Yeah. And every day I lose it, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so learning to manage my anger and really to fight the generational sin, it takes a lot of intention. I think we all say, like, I don't want to be like my parents when I grow up, or I don't want to do the things that they did, but that's all we saw growing up. So naturally, we're going to parent like them. And so,
what do you do to be intentionally not like that?
I'm struggling to find the best way. And I wish I could easily gospel parent and calmly tell my kids, like, you know, it's really hard to listen to mommy and daddy. We need to ask Jesus for help and let's pray together. But most of the time, it's like, go to timeout, or, you know, I just go straight to that response. And so I'm still working on it, and I'm trying to have better tools in my belt to work through it. And I go to counseling, and the counselor's trying to, I mean, she's helped me just verbalize how I could be a better parent and be a better mom and deal with the anger, deal with the frustrations. How could I look at them differently? How could I, what practical things can I do? Like, I feel like sometimes I just need a timeout more than my kids.
Oh, for sure.
But putting myself in timeout, I realized that's hard. Because I just want them to know how bad it was, or how frustrated I am, or how angry I am, really. But to put myself in a timeout and to calm myself down. And I just try to tell myself, these are kids I love and that I cherish and that they're a blessing, instead of thinking of them as hard work.
It was really sobering the other day when I asked my daughter, do you want to have kids? And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, really? I don't make the same effortless. And she was like, no, it's way too much work to have kids. And I thought, as much as I'm like, word, girl, you're getting the picture. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I've obviously, yeah, this seems sometimes like a chore, which it is, but like, it doesn't have to be as dramatized as I make it. And I would love for her to think it's a blessing instead of like drudgery.
I know. I'm trying to, like, when single people or married people without kids see my life or are staying with us at our house, I want to portray a better picture of parenting. Same for marriage, same for children. I think a lot of times people have the wrong idea of what it really is, but I want to be more balanced. I want them to know how hard it is, and I want them to know the blessing of it. And so that is a challenge for sure. And one thing, a friend of mine, she recently reached out to a group of us and asked for encouraging stories of why motherhood is worth it.
Okay.
And to write her letters of encouragement, because she was having a hard time in her pregnancy.
That's such a good idea.
I know. And so And that was so good of her to, one, recognize she needs help, mm-hmm. and two, to ask for it so confidently.
Yeah.
And so writing her a letter of like why motherhood has been worth it and, you know, what has brought me the most joy for my kids, that was really helpful to see and to reflect on why they bless me and why they bring me, why my life is more full with them.
So why is it worth it for you?
Why is it worth it? Bigger picture, they show me a lot of Jesus and they help me be more like Jesus. But also on a lighter note, they're hilarious and and it's fun to see how God created us and how we learn. We know nothing when we're babies.
Yeah.
And just the way that they develop and all of that wonder. I love that I get to see that in my kids. And it gives me a glimpse of how God views us as his children. And so
yeah.
Jesus is always what makes it worth it. Everything, every hardship.
It's true. So true. Yeah. I love it. You talked about a verse that you love. It's Matthew 11:28-30.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it right there? Or do you want me to find it?
I'm totally going to pull it up right now.
Okay. My plan was to have it already pulled up and then that plan didn't happen. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
Okay. Matthew 11:28-30. This is the Message version. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live lightly, freely and lightly.
Hmm.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I think my first thing that I think is unforced rhythms of grace.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I just force everything all day long, you know? What does that even look like?
I know. I don't know. But especially that first part, I think we're all so tired.
Yeah.
When anyone asks us how we're doing, it's either busy or tired. And I love that the Message version invites us. And it's more of an, I know even the NIV version, it's, you know, come to me, you know, those who are weary. But for some reason, this version really got to the core of me, like, yes, Lord, I am tired. Yes, I am worn out.
Kind of acknowledges our mess.
Yes, yeah. And I love that about the Message version, how Eugene Peterson was just able to get to the core of our feelings, even, or our emotions, or what we're experiencing as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and this idea of like, let's go on a walk, come and see what life with me is really like. Mm-hmm. And I love that imagery of like literally taking a walk with God, okay, taking a stroll with God, or this unforced rhythms of grace, like a dance with the Lord. Mm. And knowing, I think my natural state of being is to be frantic and to be crazy. And I'm type A. Yeah. I like things planned. I like to be in control. And this verse reminds me, I'm not in control. And I just need to go by his rhythm, his way. And then I get to be free. I don't have to fret or worry when I go by the unforced rhythms of grace. And that has been a comfort and has been so refreshing to my soul in motherhood, in ministry, and especially as we go into this new season of life. It's helped me to be more, I want to really seek this out.
Seek out
the unforced rhythms of grace.
Okay. I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that you're kind of heading into a desert season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's going to have a lot of sandpaper like experiences. And I think sometimes we don't know it's coming until, oh my gosh, I'm in a desert. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? But you have totally. Kind of the, can I say blessing?
Yeah.
Of knowing ahead of time that some real tricky stuff's on the horizon.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that you are then kind of thinking about this unforced rhythms of grace. How are you kind of bracing yourself for that?
It is a blessing that I get to know I'm going into a desert season, and it helps me to prepare myself. And one of the things I realized in this frantic rat race of a life that we usually live, it's hard to sit still. And I think that's one of the things he's teaching me, is that we can't abide in him, we can't grow in him when we're being frantic and crazy. And it comes when we're being contemplative and calm and going by his rhythms. And so when I think of that, the dance with the Lord, I always think it's like a slow dance.
Okay.
Or like a calm, I don't know, ballroom dance type of,
okay,
where it's sweet and slow. And I think that's what he wants me to do, is he wants me to learn how to do that, is to rest. In order for him to do the work he wants to do in the secret parts of my heart, I need to be calm and I need to do it out of a place of rest instead of striving so hard.
Yeah. It can't be a mosh pit in there.
Yeah, it can't be. And that's how it feels right now is, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to sit still. Even in my regular life, you know, I don't know how to be bored anymore. I don't know how to just sit in silence and be quiet in my heart and in my mind. I don't know how to do those things anymore. And having to learn those things fresh is a challenge. And that's what I'm trying to prepare myself. I want to have those better rhythms and learn to do those better rhythms now so that when I'm actually in the desert season, it'll come second nature to me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm preparing for now and learning, like, what does that look like for me? How do I find stillness in my life and what things fill my soul and bring me back to the Lord? And I think there are two things that do that for me. One is writing.
Okay.
And the other is nature.
Okay.
I'm already telling myself, like, okay, if things get too stifling or, that, I mean, that's how I feel about Orange County, is that it's a bit stifling to my soul. And so if things get like that, I just need to go for a walk around the neighborhood, or I need to sit down and go to a coffee shop and spend some time writing or things like that. So that's what I'm learning to do, is what is that practically look like to have unforced rhythms of grace? And a lot of it has to do with soul care, I think.
This may sound silly, but you know REI, the store?
Yeah.
They can tell you all the trails that are in that area, and maybe you could get to like a nature walk that you didn't even know was there.
No, yeah, totally. Everyone's like, oh, California is a paradise. You'll love, you know.
Mm.
And the funny thing is that what I love most about nature is vastness. I love trees.
Oh, okay.
But I also love vast, like anything vast. And so
in
Orange County, because there are so many people who live there.
Yeah.
It's congested and
the traffic is all that's vast.
Yeah, the traffic, there's houses everywhere, there are buildings everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I've told myself if I need that, aside from going on a walk, another thing I just need to do is to look up and look at the sky. Because that will always be vast, and that will always, like, nothing can block that view of mine.
Yeah.
And it always reminds me, you know, like, I love clouds, I love sunsets, I love, you know, all those things. And so it feels intimate. It's strange that when I look up, it's so vast. But it feels like I'm having a moment with God. Mm. And that it feels like worship to me when I do that. And same with writing. I feel like writing has become a worship time for me. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And I love that you'll always have sky and writing no matter where you go.
You're right. Good. Yeah. He is so kind.
Mm.
How I couldn't have planned. I didn't know I was going to write. I didn't know we were going to move back to California. I didn't know any of these things.
Mm.
And I just thought I'd do church ministry in Las Vegas for the rest of my life, because that's all I could see. Like, that's the vision he gave us before we came here. And that's all I could see. So I was ready to plant our roots here. And then he just gave me this new dream and provided everything. So I know it's going to be good, even though it's a desert season.
Yeah. He's really good at turning bad things into good things somehow.
He is so good.
So I have one more question for you.
Yes.
What is something you cannot stop talking about right now? You're telling everybody.
Okay. I thought of another one this morning. So I'll start off with that one. I love counseling.
Okay. Yes.
Have you been to counseling?
I have.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I started counseling because of the anger issues that were coming up in motherhood.
Okay.
And so I just realized I need help. And I just wanted someone to walk with me. And I realized as a pastor and as one of the leaders in the church, it's just hard to find community. It's hard to find accountability. It's hard to find someone who's going to walk alongside me, because our job is to walk alongside other people. And so I realized that I need more than just my husband to walk with me or my friends. I needed, and I wanted someone's professional opinion. Like, is this normal? Can I find a way out of this or whatnot? So that's when I started counseling just this past fall. And it has been exactly what I wanted it to be. And and it's a Christian counselor, which when you find a good one, then it's really good. I mean, for any kind of counseling, but, and she has helped me walk through these things. And a lot of it, I realized I just needed to know if it was okay. And she hears me out and she tells me it's okay. And then I feel better.
Yeah.
Oh yes. I could do this life. I could do this hard thing. I could build up the tools I need to face difficult circumstances or to face the changes that I need to see in my life and the changes I need to have in my character.
Okay.
And so counseling has been something I wish I could give that to everybody.
I know. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Cause I know it's not possible for everyone, but if it is, I highly recommend it. And then another thing would be Supper Club.
Yes. I need to know more about about this.
Okay.
I'm really kind of details person. So you love Supper Club. I need to know, though, like, when does it happen? How many people? What does it look like?
Okay. I first read about Supper Club from Jen Hatmaker, Jamie Ivey. Also, I read it in Shauna Nika's book. And so they basically gather friends. I think some of them do it weekly and some of them do it monthly. But basically, it's a group of like six friends or so. Okay. And
is it their husbands too or just women? Like, what do you do?
We do mixed. Okay. Mixed group. Yeah. And then every time we meet, someone's in charge of food. And we're a little lax on that. Like, of course, when my husband cooks, he wants to actually cook. So he does that. But sometimes, like our other friends, they work. So if they're coming from their job, then they'll just pick up something and come.
So one person's in charge of food for all the people.
Yes, one group. So we have me and my husband, and then a friend of ours and her now husband. They were just dating when we first started.
Okay.
And then two single guys.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're all connected through our church, but we don't all attend the same church at this. Like the other couple attends a different church.
So do you meet every week?
Yeah, we started off like that. Like every one of the days off that my husband has, we would meet, and that's how it started. And it was very chill. So okay. we just eat and hang out. And initially, we wanted to do it so that we could have, you know, faith conversations and encourage each other in life and all that stuff and be intentional.
From the way you're saying it, I have a feeling that didn't happen.
It didn't. Really, we were just eating and hanging out together. But you know what happened over time? And this is why I love Supper Club. Over time, we did have that connection. Over time, we realized we are family, and we can have those conversations if we wanted to, because we came to a comfort level where it could be brought up, or you know, like that other couple that's in the group, they got engaged, you know, and they got married this past May, like, and all of that, like, we are each other's close friends, and it happened because of Supper Club, and it wouldn't have happened any other way, but that has become, I realized they're my people. And we found, unfortunately, it came at the end of our time in Vegas, but we found our group of people, and not just like, I have a lot of individual friends, but I think this was the first time we created a friendship in a group.
Okay.
You know, and that's different. Like when you can hang out in a group and feel like, you know what, this is my tribe of people that I love and I would do anything for. And so that's why I love Supper Club. Also, we all love to eat. So.
Well, yeah. Kind of a prerequisite.
Yeah.
Let me ask you though, for just a very practically, if somebody's interested in doing something like this. Mm-hmm. Was it awkward at first? And how did you find the people that you invited?
Initially, this friend of mine, her and her husband, they're major foodies. And so we always had connected on food as couple friends. And so it just felt like, you know what? They needed community. We needed community. So let's meet up. And then we realized, you know, it would be good to include her brother.
Okay.
And then I think it was fine, but when that last guy came in, it just felt full, like, this is it. This is right. And so it helped that we all knew each other from either they had grown up together or we were already friends. Okay. So yes, initially it felt not awkward, like we didn't know each other, but awkward like, oh, what are we doing here? Like, okay. What's the point of this? So and I think, I don't know, it's strange that a lot of pastors are introverts or we are awkward socially. And so two of us are pastors, me and our youth pastor. And yet I realized in a group setting, I kind of shut down.
Interesting.
And so when I'm one-on-one, I love that. I love drawing people out. I love talking. I love walking with them, all that stuff. But when we're in a group setting, I just shut down. And so it took some time for all of us to kind of feel comfortable and feel like family, like it's fine. And over time, it naturally did happen because we saw each other so often.
Well, I want to try it.
Please.
The problem is I want to invite like 37 people and that's going to be ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, something to think about. I really do want to do it.
fun.
Yeah. And another thing I realized, I hear this a lot, like find your tribe, find your people.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's not as easy as like, go do it, you know, go make it happen, but that it can happen. And that's what I learned through Supper Club is if you don't have community, like close-knit community, you can make it happen instead of just waiting for it to come to you, you know, like waiting for someone to invite you to their Supper Club or waiting for, you know, like you can make your own Supper Club.
Isn't that funny? Because it's so obvious, but it seems like, are you kidding me? Could do that.
Yeah.
It's revolutionary, but it's so basic.
So basic.
But we just don't think that we can. But you're right. We want to wait for a Supper Club invitation.
Yeah. And I think people feel left out or feel sad, like, oh, why didn't you invite me? Why can't I be part of that group? Can I join you? And I was pretty set on like no one else can join.
Okay.
Not because I'm trying to be mean, but because we had a groove. Mm-hmm. And yes, I could have dinner with anyone else and it would be good too, but this group already had its groove. And so to make it a revolving door, like anyone can come, would kind of, it would be like going backwards, you know, like we would have to adjust every single time. And so anyway, I would want to encourage everyone, not just have Supper Club, but just to find their people and intentionally spend time with them and do it over food.
So good. And it helps if your husband is a chef. So.
Yeah, it does.
That's so funny. Well, Grace, thank you so much for sharing your heart with me today. I have really loved getting to know you more than just that one time at that one meal years ago.
Thank you for asking me to be on the podcast.
You're so welcome. You have a good rest of your day, and I look forward to hearing what God does through this new move.
Thank you. You too.
I think that episode gave us a lot to think about. I don't know if you were uncomfortable as I was when she talked about just feeling like she had to change who she was depending on who she was around because she didn't really fit anywhere. I would encourage you, if you've never been in that situation, to really find people who might be in that situation and listen. Give them a place to be themselves. For those of us who are Christ followers, that's kind of the whole point. You know, the golden rule we tell our children 73 times a day that we should treat people the way we want to be treated. We're supposed to honor people and prefer them over ourselves. So what will your strategy to struggle well be this week? Maybe you think you might need to go to counseling. Maybe that would be just a really great move for you to make. And I want to say, since we recorded this, I actually started going to counseling and it's been amazing. I love it. Maybe like Grace, you can see that in the future, there's going to be something coming up that's going to be tricky. And you can prepare ahead for a desert season like she did. Or even prepare today, because one's going to come, regardless, for all of us. Maybe when she was talking about an invitation to rest, maybe you realize you just really need to sit still and rest. Sit in silence. Maybe you are really intrigued by the idea of dancing with Jesus. What is that like? Is that a thing we can do? I know that for me, when I spend time with Jesus, we do not dance, but there's a lot of people who I know that is like a thing that they do. So don't be afraid to get weird. Do what we need to do. Get some time with God and ask him to make himself real to you, not just like the flannel graph Jesus that we learned from Sunday school. Maybe you're in a really hard season of your mothering and you don't even know why any of this is worth it. Maybe you can ask your friends like Grace's friend did, tell me why this is worth it, please. Or sit and reflect on what is it that makes this job so stinking awesome? Because it's really easy just to focus on what's hard. Maybe you're in a place that's pretty good with your mothering and you can write a note of encouragement to a mom who you can tell is not doing super. Maybe you need to sit and think about what gives your soul rest. Grace said that for her, it's writing and nature. It really actually made me think, like, what is mine? Not exactly sure. So that is going to be my strategy to struggle well this week, is to try to figure out what brings my soul rest. So don't forget about Struggle Well Wednesday on Instagram. Come over and tell us how you struggled well that day or any day this week. I don't care. I just want to hear how something could have gone crazy, but instead you did this other thing and it ended up going pretty well. The show notes will have everything you need to know, and you can find those at momstrugglingwell.com. You guys are the bomb. Do we say that anymore? Probably not. Okay. Well, you still are. Have a great week of struggling well.